victory is in obedience to law. Now, we have studied before that if we indulge appetite in one area or indulge any kind of habit, any kind of habit that we enjoy, this tends to strengthen and to encourage a perversion of a habit in another area, or a perversion of a sense in another area. Let us say we indulge an appetite for food. This may make us so that we require the indulgence of an appetite for buying things irresponsibly. So the individual who buys things irresponsibly may have the origin of that at his dinner table. A child who misbehaves may have the origin of that misbehavior at his dinner table because of the fact that he indulges himself, then he begins to cultivate some kind of perversion. So if we wish to have the victory over our perverted habits, the place to start is with our appetites. Now, another very important subject that we should discuss is that of Proverbs 28, verse 7. Whoso keepeth the law is a wise man. Whoso keepeth the law is a wise man. Now, if we see that our children are not obeying law, those laws that we make, as well as those laws having to do with the welfare of our beings, having to do with school laws or community laws or whatever. If our children are beginning to grow up without law, we should take close account of that and require them to come up to a higher standard. This subject of being obedient to law has been given far too little attention. And I would like to address some of these problems in what we talk about today. The first is that of habits. We should be at the head in the temperance reform. We want our sisters who are now injuring themselves by wrong habits to put them away and come to the front and be workers in reform. The reason why many of us will fail in the time of trouble is because of laxity in temperance and indulgence of appetite. 9/10 of the wickedness among children of today is caused by intemperance in eating and drinking. Adam and Eve lost Eden through indulgence of appetite, and we can only regain it by the denial of the same. How important then it is for us to recognize that this kind of instruction refers to us, the obedience to law. Now, in studying America's fastest growing disease, that of bulimia, you should understand a few things about what bulimia is. Bulimia is that of pathologic overeating to the point of pain or disability of some kind, and always with one of two things, either making oneself vomit or using purges of various kinds, such as laxatives, to encourage the rapid exodus of the material they have eaten through the intestinal tract. These are the signs of a problem with bulimia, with pathologic overeating. I have had patients who have been so caught up with this disease that they ate from morning till night. I had one 23-year-old young lady who was a retired person from the telephone company, not retired because of her age, but retired because of her disability. She began to eat so much that she could not keep her job. She ate all the time. She could not answer the telephone at the telephone company because of having a mouthful of food. She would swallow very quickly when a call would come in, but the calls were too frequent for her to continue to maintain her job. A nurse that we had as a patient could not keep her job because she was always in one of the bathrooms, back in the treatment room or in the supply room, eating all the time. When she went home, she ate all the day long. The young lady who worked at the telephone company went home to live with her mother, and there she would start eating as soon as her mother left home in the morning for her job. Then, by lunchtime, she had eaten enough for about 6 people for 3 or 4 weeks. Then when her mother came home by 5 o'clock in the afternoon, she would have eaten so much that her mother would have to go out and buy groceries again so that they could cook again. So her mother got in the habit of just buying sufficient food for one meal, just cooking enough for one meal. Then the rest of the food in the house would be raw food like rice or potatoes. And this young lady would go through the cabinets of the house. It didn't matter what was in the cabinets. She would take food of any kind, raw food or cooked food, and would either cook it, and sometimes cook it very improperly, just cook it enough to start eating, and compulsively eat. It did not have to be good food nor food that she liked. She did not have to be hungry nor even wanting to eat. She would just eat until she required assistance from vomiting or from purgatives to relieve the pain. She said that at times she would eat so much that her abdomen would be so far out that she would look as if she were 7 or 8 months pregnant. This, of course, is quite a disabling disease. It often is associated with the other kind of disorder, and that is anorexia nervosa. Anorexia nervosa is characterized by an improper understanding of how fat one is. Most of these people with anorexia nervosa believe that they are grossly overweight. One young lady who was a patient of mine would take off everything that she had on in order to weigh herself. She would even take out a tiny little brace that she had in her mouth to weigh herself so that she would be certain not to have anything that would make any more weight for her on the scales. This young lady was quite disabled by her disorder. When she went to a fellowship dinner, she would take just 1 or 2 little sticks of carrots, but be very interested to see that everybody else got plenty of food. She would help them to go around and serve their plates. She would try to make certain that everybody had lots of food. She was very preoccupied with cooking, preoccupied with recipe books and this kind of thing. These are all characteristics of individuals with anorexia nervosa. Now, the matter with the person with anorexia nervosa may be slightly different from the person with predominantly bulimia. We cannot say that for certain because they may be the same disease, just 2 phases of it. Usually, both of these will have phases of the other, although one may be the principal expression. With anorexia nervosa, these people are usually young ladies between the ages of 15 and 30, but it can occur as early as 8 or 9 and as late as 50 or 60. But that is unusual. Most of these young ladies are in their teens and 20s and maybe early 30s. Anorexia nervosa is usually of the upper classes. A young lady whose father has been sort of uninvolved with the family and whose mother may be quite demanding, maybe demanding is not the word, quite inspiring, and the children begin to strive to please mother or to reach her standard of performance and also to reach the standard of performance that they think would interest dad in what they're doing, to try to capture some of his attention. And so all of these features, these psychological features, are also parts of the disease. We had a young lady with anorexia nervosa who came here weighing 75 pounds. She felt herself, however, to be a grossly overweight individual. We asked her to draw a little line sketch of herself and just make it a realistic sketch of what she looked like. It was amazing that she drew a large picture, a picture of a grossly overweight individual, while her skin was actually hanging off her bones because of her enormous weight loss. We also asked her to give us an indication of how much she ate. She was eating small quantities at that time, perhaps just one slice of bread or half slice of bread during an entire day, perhaps two or three tablespoons of peas and one or two tablespoons of greens, and that was about all she would eat all day long, perhaps one piece of fruit taken in three small meals, one apple split into three parts. So this young lady was thinking that she didn't have much leeway with her food because she was eating such an enormous quantity. And if we would try to give her a little something, she would take a small bit of it, but not very much. It would be maybe half teaspoonful, and she would play with that on the plate for quite a long time. When we asked her how much she was eating, she estimated more than 2,500 calories, and yet her total calories would not amount to 300 calories. So you can see that there is more to this disorder than just a desire to lose weight. This young lady had also lost her menstrual periods. This is typical. And many times the loss of the menstrual periods will begin before the weight loss begins and before the major constriction of the appetite begins as well. So this may be, the disease may have features of it other than that of psychological problems. It is definite that there are physiologic properties to this disorder. The mortality rate is relatively high, from 5 to 20% in some series is the mortality rate. So we should not think that if a young lady has anorexia nervosa, that she should just be told, well, you'll grow out of it and everything will be all right after a while. You should vigorously and energetically treat these young ladies because a certain number of them do die. They generally die of infections that occur. These infections may be pneumonia. They may be gastrointestinal diseases. They may have abscesses that make a great deal of toxicity for the body. They could have kidney problems that lead to death. So with this kind of seriousness to the disorder, we can see that there is a need for treating these disorders. Now, in order to treat these individuals, you need to understand something about the nature of craving. And when you understand about cravings, then it can help you to sort of key in on the problems of these individuals psychologically as well as physiologically. Let us just take cravings that occur to drugs and to alcohol and tobacco. These kinds of cravings are often triggered by foods, food sensitivities. A person can have a food sensitivity to sugar. This sugar sensitivity makes the individual then crave whatever drug is his favorite. Let's say he is on Demerol. To take sugar will trigger a craving for the Demerol. Let's say he's on alcohol. Taking honey at a meal, or especially if honey is mixed with a fat like peanut butter. Honey and peanut butter may trigger a craving for alcohol, and the person may go on a binge that will last 3 weeks just from taking one sandwich laced rather heavily with honey and peanut butter. Drugs also may trigger a craving, so that if a person takes aspirin, the individual may subsequently have a craving for food and go into a bulimic attack just from this kind of thing. So we can see that there are many things that may be involved in the establishment of a craving. Cravings represent abnormal drives that have a compelling nature without regard for the benefit or the welfare of the person, nor the happiness of the family involved with that person. Cravings can cause one to eat to the point of pain, heedless of the fact that ill health is bound to follow, or even poverty, or that others may have a problem because of their having eaten all the food in the house. Cravings are a perversion of a normal function. Eating and a proper appetite is a normal function, but becomes perverted because of the misuse of these. Salty foods, which irritate the stomach, can often be the cause of cravings. Now, I'm certain that each person here has had the experience of eating something salty and then immediately finding that one has a craving for water. But you may have a craving for something else salty. You may take one potato chip, then you want a second, and then a whole bag, and then two bags, and then three bags. And sometimes there is no really good place to stop in the eating of potato chips once you have had even one. Now, salty foods also irritate the stomach. And this brings up another part of this subject of cravings, and that is the irritation of the stomach. Stomach irritants lead one to having an increased motility or movement of the stomach, which simply means that the stomach is going to be sending signals up to the brain. Unfortunately, the brain cannot receive signals other than just, I'm hungry or I'm full. The stomach does not even recognize many signals that say, I'm tired or I'm in pain. Just full or empty and not even irritated. We can sometimes send signals up from the stomach rather than from the central nervous system that say, I am thirsty also. So we receive just very few signals from the stomach. And most of these, if we are receiving any kind of signal from the stomach at all, most of the signals that we will be receiving will be saying hunger. So let us say we have a stomach that is in motion. Signal goes up to the brain that says hunger. So it's received in the business office of the brain and put in the little cubicle for hunger. So then we get a signal for thirst. Business office receives it and puts the order for whatever it is that has come from the stomach in the hunger bin, because there's only one big bin for the stomach. So every irritating or movement or fatigue or thirst impulse that comes to the brain will be put in the same bin, that of hunger. All of these are stored up until food is available. As soon as food is available, all of these orders are cashed in at one time, and the person begins to eat with an uncontrolled appetite. And this can help you to understand a little bit about this matter of how this matter of craving works. Now, cravings are controllable then to some degree by controlling those things that tend to trigger the craving. Guanine, which is one of the purines, this is an alkaloid present in pork and other meats. Eggs also contain certain alkaloids that tend to have a stimulatory or irritating effect on the nervous system. Guanine, one of the alkaloid that I mentioned earlier, has a biphasic reaction, first stimulatory, then depressive. Most of the alkaloids have a very pronounced stimulatory and then depressive effect. Sometimes the stimulatory effect is very brief and the depressive phase is long. Sometimes the stimulatory effect is very long and the depressive phase is very brief. So it depends on the kind of alkaloid involved as to whether we will be having a major stimulatory or a major depressive effect. Now, another very tricky thing about the purines, the alkaloids, is that you may have a stimulatory effect that lasts only a short time, then depression, and then a day or so later you will have another stimulatory effect from the same alkaloid, but not because you have recently taken it. So it may take 3 or 4 days for the effect of the alkaloids to wear off. Nicotine and caffeine, strychnine, a number of alkaloids are well known. They're in the same family with morphine. All of these alkaloids have a biphasic action, stimulatory first, then depressive. Now, in the depressive effect, we need not have just a depression on the mind. We may have a depression on the transmission of impulses that would make it so that the individual would be unable to suppress his stimulatory phase. Now, I don't know if you understand that kind of thing, but what happens is this. When you're depressed, those nerve impulses, when you have a depression on your nerves, those nerve fibers that act as an inhibitory function on the major transmission of nerves, these inhibitory functions come in like this from the side and hold back the major flow of impulses. Well, let's say you have a depression on these inhibitory nerve fibers. Then you will have too many stimulatory nerve functions. And that's why several days later you may get a stimulation because of the continuation of the depression. But by that time, it is a depression only on the inhibitory nerve fibers in the brain. We are very complex in the central nervous system. And because of this enormous complexity, it behooves us to study physiologic law, study nutrition, and be obedient to all that we know in the form of nutrition. Now, the habit of overeating can also cause cravings. We simply overeat, we become depressed or confused in the mind because of too much sodium or too much potassium or too many amino acids. And this depression in the mind then sets up cravings for us. Eating too fast promotes cravings. Eating too fast can also promote a condition that makes you eat more food, and just eating more food then can confuse the mind. Eating too fast is a very good sign of nervousness. The more nervous you are, the more likely you are to introduce food into the stomach and swallow it without even chewing one time. Just introduce it. It sets off a reflex, and you have swallowed before you can possibly get the food maneuvered around between the teeth to properly chew. Now, proper chewing does require a certain amount of discipline and calmness. Now, how do you get discipline and calmness? Well, one way to get discipline and calmness is that of plenty of exercise. Take vigorous exercise out of doors every day. Make certain that your exercise is to the point of physical training, training for the heart and the lungs, and also sufficient to suppress the appetite. Moderate exercise will encourage appetite. Lots of exercise, vigorous, out of doors, and prolonged to the point of good physical training. This kind of exercise depresses the appetite or can suppress an abnormal appetite. Cravings can also be caused by certain nutritional deficiencies. Magnesium deficiency can cause certain symptoms. The physical symptoms from magnesium deficiency include slow recovery after effort, muscular cramps, habit tics, digestive disorders, colitis. Mental symptoms of magnesium deficiency include intellectual dullness, mental confusion, anxiety, a sense of dread or impending doom or unexplained anguish. Biochemical changes from magnesium deficiency include carbohydrate malabsorption, calcium and iron imbalances, and this kind of thing. Now, where can we get plenty of magnesium? We can get them from all nuts and seeds. We can get them from legumes, from whole grains, peanuts, carob, greens, beets, and squash. All of these are good sources of magnesium. Carob is especially good as a source of magnesium. Carob is also a good source of calcium. Carob is a good source of B vitamins. We don't know all about the analysis of carob. So far as I know, there have not been any really good analyses done on carob, but those that I have seen have indicated a good spread of the minerals and vitamins. So I recommend this as a change for you from chocolate. Now, certain foods that set up a craving inside of us would include sugar and all refined grains. In fact, you will find that the more refined the food is, the more pungent and strong the flavor is, the more likely you are to be unable to control your appetite. In the book Third Selected Messages, or Selected Messages Book 3, you will find a statement that reads like this: the cook is not at liberty to prepare foods that are unhealthful and rich and irresistible. Now, irresistible foods are made irresistible only by using refined foods: salt, sugar, honey, and fats of various kinds. Now, the fats would be margarine, mayonnaise, fried foods, cooking fats. And I recommend to my patients who have either bulimia or anorexia that they not use these refined foods. This makes them unable to control their appetite. I recommend, however, that they instead use such things as greens, legumes, whole grains, and the like, so that they can reap the benefits of having plenty of minerals and vitamins in their central nervous systems to help them have control. Too little exercise is always involved in the individuals with both bulimia and anorexia. I have never seen a case that did not have a problem with one or the other either one of these two diseases, who did not have a problem with too little exercise. Dehydration is often a problem for the individual who has anorexia or bulimia. How much water should one drink? This is always a question in individuals. Whether they have bulimia or anorexia, everybody wants to know how much water to drink. No one can tell you precisely how much, but general rules can be laid down. One of the rules that you can lay down is that the urine should be kept quite pale. Now, as you drink enough water to make the urine pale, you will find that that will work out to be somewhere between 4 and 8 glasses of water. In the summertime, especially if you are exercising heavily, sweat is pouring off of you, you will then find that you may need 8 glasses in 1 hour. So you can see very easily that no one can tell you how much water you should take. So a good key is to drink sufficient water to keep the urine quite pale. You should urinate several times during the day, perhaps twice in the morning, twice in the afternoon, once on arising, and once before going to bed. Some people, especially if they retain fluid in the feet or legs, will find that they will need to get up during the night because of the fact that when they assume the lying down position, they return this fluid that has accumulated in their tissues, they return this to the bloodstream. Then this water is then available for the kidneys, and the kidneys put out this extra urine, extra water as urine, and the person may have to arise during the night to pass urine. This is not necessarily an indication that the person has a problem with the kidneys. It usually is not. It usually simply means that the fluid is accumulating in the tissues. Milk and all dairy products are a common cause of cravings. I always take my patients off all dairy products. Now, if a person has a true sensitivity to dairy products, then you can be certain that if they take any quantity, does not have to be a large amount, it can be just that small amount that one would get in half slice of bread, where milk was used as a part of the fluid to make bread with. The person who is sensitive to a food cannot take any of it. That means not just dipping the finger in it and touching that to the tongue. It should be strictly avoided. So these individuals must read labels very carefully. Meats, eggs, these are all foods that can cause a problem with setting up cravings. We've mentioned salty foods and stomach irritants. We have not mentioned a preoccupation with food. The Bible says that there are some people who have their stomachs as their god. Now, these individuals have a preoccupation with food. Those who have anorexia nervosa usually have a preoccupation with food as a part of their disease process. We recommend to these individuals that they study the Bible, that they train the mind to dwell on heavenly themes. And this is possible. It is a command from the Lord, and whatever is a command from the Lord is also an enablement from the Lord. The habit of overeating in the past is also one of the important reasons why people do get anorexia or bulimia. Overeating in the past means that the automatic cutoff to the appetite has been lost because we have not always and consistently from childhood up obeyed the law that says eat thus and such amount and no more. If we had always done that, we would have such a delicately tuned cutoff system that when we reached the amount of food that we should have, we would be just like a little child who says, "No, Mommy, I've had enough." And she says, "But you haven't eaten thus and such yet." "I've had enough." "Don't you want some pie or cake?" "Yes, I'd like to have some." Set that before them. They take one small bite and that's all. They can't take any more. Their appetite wants it, but they have an automatic cutoff that says no more. We have adults have lost that. That isn't because it's a natural process of aging. It is because of abuse that we have lost it. But we can retrieve it to some degree. But the way to do that is by repeated obedience to the law of eating only an approved amount, only a proper amount. When you have eaten enough, stop eating. Now, let's say you are not able to stop eating just on a signal from the stomach. Then what you should do is to serve your plate with a reasonable amount, even if you have to count calories to find out what is a reasonable amount. Eat that amount. Maybe you would eat it out under a tree. Serve a tray. Have everything that you're going to eat at that meal on the tray. No seconds. And never any cheating. But if you need to get all together, away from food and away from people, in order that you might get a few days of consistent control of the appetite, you may need to do just that. And then at the end of several days, you may have enough courage and strength that you would be able to eat with other people again. You may still want to serve your plate with everything you're going to eat and refuse to take any seconds of any kind. Then the time will finally come when it will not be necessary for you to go through these kinds of maneuvers. You may be able to just eat as everybody else does. But you will also know that day by day, week by week, as you have victory after victory after victory, that you will be stronger and you will see that you can control things much better. Now, an inadequate work experience is another thing that causes many people to have bulimia or anorexia. They do not have satisfaction in their work. They do not enjoy work. They have nervousness or dread or fear of their work. And consequently, this inadequate work experience makes it so that these individuals have a loss of control of the appetite. Eating too fast. Eating between meals. You should make vows Make rules for yourself. Then if you find that you're unable to keep these rules, get a companion. Keep the companion right with you. Don't let the person out of your sight, and tell them not to let you out of their sight until you have strengthened yourself, until there are days or weeks of victory behind you and that you are strong enough to stand on your own two feet. Some individuals have no set time or place for their meals. These individuals can eat anywhere. They can eat in the grocery store. They can eat when they find berries out on the trail. They can eat if they find something, if they find a piece of popcorn on the floor. They can eat anytime or anywhere. You should have certain set times and set places where you eat, and you will eat nowhere else. If you're accustomed to eating in the grocery store or eating in the car, you will eat far more than if you have no other place to eat except at your meals and at a certain meal time. Now, individuals who are accustomed to this kind of grazing type of behavior, when they eat with individuals who have a meal time, they often say, "Oh, you certainly do eat a large quantity. Yes, you're going to be eating 15 to 1800 calories in a day. The average American eats 20 to 2200 calories a day. But the person who eats two meals a day will usually eat a fair-sized meal, a meal that will be almost astonishing to the individual who is not accustomed to eating all the food that he is going to eat at one meal, and then eating nothing between meals and eating all the rest he's going to eat in that day in the next meal. It does require quite a good bit of time and attention to the meal process if one eats a meal only twice a day. You will find, if you go to the two-meal plan, that the two-meal plan will make it so that you can get by with much less food. Now, the two-meal plan can work this way, that you would take about 50 or 60% of your meal at breakfast time, then the other 40 or 50% of your meal at lunchtime, and those two meals would be all that you would take in the course of a day. Take some 15 to 1800 calories for ordinary maintenance. If you do a lot of physical work, then you may have to take a little bit more. You may want to take maybe 1000 calories or 1100 calories at each of, or approximately that, at each of two meals. That would bring you up to 22 to 2500 calories if you do a lot of heavy work. If you do mainly book work or desk work, then you will find that if you chew your food well, if you eat slowly, if you do not use a lot of water with your meals, you will find most likely that you can get by very handily with around 1,700 calories, more or less. Now, tension and interruption at mealtime can also cause quite a great deal of loss of appetite, loss of control of the appetite. If you get a phone call, you answer the call, and you're trying to eat between times that you have to talk, and you lose track of how much you have eaten. And pretty soon, the tension or nervousness of answering the phone can make it so that you simply overeat. Your attention is not diverted from your determination to control the appetite, and pretty soon you have overeaten. Failure to eat with dignity and a certain formality can also cause many people to have problems with loss of control of the appetite. Now, fluid retention is one of the reasons why some people with anorexia or bulimia give as the reason why they use purgatives. They may use something like Ex-Lax or castor oil even to ensure that the food go quickly through the intestinal tract. Fluid accumulation occurs when we overeat anything. If we overeat fats or salty foods or foods that have other minerals in them or even certain vitamins, we are likely to retain food. Fluid. Now, the fluid retention can then be treated by a day or so of fasting. If you have fluid retention in your ankles, a day or two of fasting may be just what you would need to get rid of this excess fluid. Exercise may also help you to get rid of excess fluid. Leaving off salt or leaving off fat can also help you to get rid of excess fluid. When you go for a walk, you may have noticed that just walking along, striding along, and slinging your hands beside your sides, that this causes your fingers to become swollen. This swelling of the fingers is not anything that is pathologic. It simply means that a little fluid has accumulated because of the centrifugal action of swinging the hands. Just more pressure makes fluid accumulate in the fingers. Now, this fluid will always go away in 1 to 2 hours, and then the fingers will usually look a little thinner than is customary for the individual. So pay attention to that kind of thing as a proper way that you can keep from accumulating too much fluid. Elastic stockings or ACE bandages can be used for individuals who have one extremity swollen from, let us say, varicose veins. Now, the cause of varicose veins, you should understand, because it's so easy to correct the cause. Once you have varicose veins, the only way to correct that is by surgery or by the use of elastic stockings. But you can prevent the continued development of varicose veins by simply reducing intra-abdominal pressure. Now, if the intra-abdominal pressure increases from such things as constipation, gas, eating too much, being overweight, or whatever other causes increase intra-abdominal pressure, pregnancy and the like, tumors even, these can increase the pressure on the inferior vena cava, which means that blood will back up in the venous system behind the place where you have the pressure on the abdomen. So this increase in pressure down below will make the veins dilate, and pretty soon there will be an overstretching of the little valves. These are little structures that come up to a point on the inside, and blood can get through this way, but if blood tries to go back through, then they parachute out sort of and catch the blood so that it can't go backward. But if we increase the pressure sufficiently, then there will be a stretching of these valves, and that then means that the individual has stretched veins, which will eventually become varicose to the point that one may get a little pain from the varicose veins. Elastic stockings and ACE bandages should be able to take care of that quite well. Should you get varicose ulcers, should be treated with what we call an Una boot. The Una boot is a rigid bandage which you can purchase from a pharmacy, and the pharmacy can even give you instructions as to how to use it. Loss of sleep is another cause of fluid accumulation in the body, and this kind of fluid accumulation can be easily corrected by simply correcting your loss of sleep. A good night of sleep for individuals who have swollen ankles can often be very helpful. Another cause of fluid retention is that of tenderness in muscles from over-exercising. Many times people will think they're doing themselves quite a favor. They will over-exercise vigorously, get very tender, swollen muscles. These muscles may accumulate 3 or 4 pounds of extra fluid. So they get on the scales and they have actually gained weight, even though they may have been on a very strict diet, trying to cut down on calories and greatly increasing their exercise. And with all of that effort, they may have actually gained weight. That isn't uncommon at all, and it is quite discouraging to the individual. Premenstrual syndrome will also be associated almost always with an accumulation of a certain amount of fluid. This accumulation of fluid can be corrected by the same kinds of things that will correct other types of fluid retention, such as restriction of salt, oil, sugar, and any other very concentrated food. All the animal products, all the split foods like wheat germ and the like. Also by plenty of rest, by getting lots of exercise, especially climbing lots of stairs. And by lots of stairs, that means several flights several times a day, like 6 or 8 flights, 4 or 5 times a day. That can help a woman with the premenstrual syndrome quite a lot. Now, with these simple bits of instruction, I think that you would be able to assist people who have anorexia and bulimia. These individuals must be required to do what you say. Sometimes a mere suggestion will not be adequate, and you may have to use some compulsion to assist the patient to start eating again. Once a patient with anorexia begins to eat again, sometimes they will have a recovery of their equilibrium and will be quite able to begin a good program again for themselves that will lead to health.
You have been listening to another special American Christian Ministries presentation. This is a digital recording for optimum sound quality. International copyright, all rights reserved. To order a copy of this or other presentations, or for a free catalog, please call toll-free 800-233-4450. International calls dial 717-652-7000. You may also order from our secure website at www.AmericanChristianMinistry.org. There you will discover the largest selection of authentic Adventist preaching available. You can trust ACM. There's no compromise here. If American Christian Ministries has been a blessing to you, why not take a moment just now and send us a note or an email with your testimony? We'll share it with the speakers and volunteer workers to encourage them. Your prayers and continued financial support are very important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He is coming soon.